We learned, like, over this that it's just really humbling what the universe is capable of throwing at you. So, you know, I think Emily and I are just more determined than ever to keep fighting, and you know, we're not done, so COVID's not gonna get us.
Welcome to Small Business Stories presented by Vistaprint. My name is Jeff Israel. Joining me today is the co-owner of the Inner Cycle Studio, Hillary Mandelbaum. Hillary, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So tell everybody a little bit about the Inner Cycle.
Inner Cycle is an indoor cycling studio. We are located on the North Shore. We started out with the first location being in Beverly, and we've grown to five, but they are all north of Boston.
Very cool. And so how long have you guys been in operation?
We opened our doors in December of 2011.
Wow, so almost 10 years, almost a decade strong.
Yes.
So how did the idea for the Inner Cycle start? How did you guys, you and your co-owner, Emily, get started?
Sure. So a little back story about Emily and I. We went to high school together. We're very good friends through high school. Parted for college and went our separate ways. And then we kind of met back around in this area post-college and just started working out together for, you know, something to do. And we stumbled on a spin class one day and absolutely just fell head over heels for it and walked out of there like, wow, what was that? So then we started seeking them out and realized that, you know, not all of them were created equal, and thought to ourselves, what if we just opened up a business that was just spin? Because at the time, this is when like boutique studios started coming around, like yoga studios and those niche boutique fitness studios specializing in a certain exercise.
Sure.
They didn't really exist quite yet. So we said, what about spin? What if we just did spin? So then we searched it and Googled it, and really only existed in New York City and in LA at the time. So we kind of just kept digging in and decided to go for it.
Wow. So what was it like? You mentioned when you guys first started, it was kind of one of the first niche cycling studios around in the area. What were the first couple of years like, and how'd you do your marketing, and how did that all go?
So it was very, very different. There was now they're everywhere, and there's a lot of competition in this space. But back then, like I said, it was just, you know, major cities only. A guy by the name of Bill Pryor, he consulted us in the very infant stages of it and just kind of said, well, you know what, there's really a business here, but, you know, don't quit your day job. So at first it was like just a lot of sweat equity. We put a ton of time into building it organically, showing up, being there all the time, learning people's names, word of mouth, you name it, we did it. And I think none of social media even existed, like Instagram, Facebook. It was all just so brand new. We certainly didn't know how to use it. So it's been a very much kind of learn as you go type of thing. But yeah, it started out in our hometown. So that was good. That helped get us, I think, the word around to our immediate networks, and then friends of friends and friends of friends' friends. And it just kind of kept growing year over year really well. So it was about 3.5 years in, we opened a second location.
What were some of the signs that you saw that you needed to open a second space?
Just really that we were having so much fun with it. Like, it was busy, it was bustling. We had people traveling to Beverly for it, you know, whether they lived in a couple towns over or they grew up in Beverly but had moved away. They would come seek us out on the weekends. And so we just kind of saw, okay, we could set up shop in another town and do the same thing. We had already kind of established our brand. So yeah, and then we just kind of shopped around for real estate and found a good spot. A couple years after that, you just kind of start looking. Once you get into a groove with the location and it's got its staff and it's got its traction and it's kind of working, it's almost a recipe now.
Cool. Yeah, and we've talked to a lot of business owners that have either just made the expansion or thinking about it. And a lot of people have told us that the first one, your first location is great. Once you open your second one, it's probably the hardest to open that that second location or second installment. And then after that, like you mentioned, it's sort of a recipe. It gets easier over time to sort of continue expanding. Did you guys find that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you learn from your mistakes. So that when they come up the next time around at a different spot, you already know what you're getting into. So I would say that the real learning curve is in the first and second location. Although COVID really proved us wrong with all of that, and we can probably get to that later. But, you know, we kind of had changed our thought process that when we first opened, we said, you know, we need a big space. We can get, who knows, 50 bikes in there, 50 people. And then we found, you know, the really successful studios in terms of profitability and stuff is just, you know, the smaller rooms. You don't need that many bikes. You need to be busy with the smaller space and the fewer bikes, but we don't need a 50-person studio because you're paying for the square footage. So in our newer locations, they are definitely smaller, which has bit us for COVID because people need space. The bigger studios right now are what we're working with right now, now that we're able to reopen. But when we were actually seeking out locations as we got older in business, we were definitely downsizing square footage.
For sure. I wanted to talk, you brought it up, this post-COVID landscape that we're living in now had a huge effect on almost every business, especially businesses in the fitness space. I was curious if you could tell me sort of what your journey has been like since March, you know, what happened in mid-March and that journey that has taken you to now where we're talking in mid-July.
Really, we did not see any of it coming. But in March, we are in our historically very busy time of business because January is resolution time and people get into a routine. February is great. March, it's still really cold, so nobody's working out outside. So it was very, very busy. And then, you know, it started hearing about this and it started getting to be very apparent there was something really large going on. And we had changed some protocols and cleaning and decreased capacity in studios where in the first and second week in March, we kind of pulled back our capacity to only allow for half to sign up. So we would, you know, basically block off every other bike. And instead of 30 people in class, we got 15. And then it kind of got to the point where Emily and I just looked at each other and said, what are we doing? This doesn't feel right anymore. You know, even with the spacing and the increased cleaning protocols and stuff, it just didn't feel like we were putting ourselves in a safe position. So we actually, before it was mandated, and I'm very proud to say so, decided to close the studio doors and just kind of pause because we weren't comfortable at running classes anymore. So that was really a pretty incredible time because it was so scary. None of our competitors had done it yet. We could kind of see that was probably the way things were going, but it was just in our heart, sort of like the right thing to do. And so we closed on a Sunday. I believe it was maybe the 13th of March or something.
How long were you guys closed for?
So it ended up being 4 months.
Wow.
So we closed. And soon after that, we said, okay, well, now what? We've got 120 bikes just sitting idle at 5 locations. Right. What are we going to do? We decided that we would rent them out and figure out a way to get a virtual platform up and running, which we've never, ever thought of doing before. Really, we didn't even play with Peloton. We never considered it to be a competitor of ours because we didn't have an app. We didn't have home bikes. We wanted people to come to the studio. So now that we were closed and we've outsourced all of our bikes, we said, well, we got to get our people in front of our instructors from their home somehow. So a handful of our instructors had bikes at home, and we quickly learned up on Zoom and Vimeo and all these other virtual platforms that you can use. We very quickly, like within, I would say, a week to 10 days, had a online schedule, which was great because people that had their bikes that we rented out to them, it was a recurring, you know, weekly revenue that we could depend on, at least, you know, for the time being. And it's a way to stay connected to our community because people were stuck at home and, you know, so used to socializing and so used to that community experience that you get from gyms and fitness. And it was a really great way to stay connected. And I think just great for our business too, because it was like, we're still here. This is crazy. and we're here for you. And people need to work out for their mental state, for their sanity and for their health. It kept people moving, and it kept us alive, really.
For sure. Yeah, I know. And thinking back to those first couple of weeks in March, you're right, especially here where we're in Massachusetts, pretty serious lockdown and that people took very seriously. And I was curious, you guys got that platform up within a week, you mentioned. Was there a lot of trial and error involved in getting that online platform going?
Yes and no. I mean, I think there was definitely a lot of hiccups we learned along the way. Okay, we tried it out for the first couple of days, and the audio was just terrible. So we learned really quickly, like, you need your own built-in microphone and earbuds to be able to project your voice through the computer. And then we've learned a cool trick for sharing the computer sound for the audio, because we had started where people just kind of taught to the computer in Zoom. At least we use Zoom. And not to say anything negative about it, because it's really been a lifeline, but it's just not equipped to really do what we had wanted to do with it.
Sure.
So the sound was terrible, like at first. And some people's Wi-Fi, our instructors anyhow, they would try to teach and it would just be frozen. Or so, we kind of learned from those and tailored our schedule to adjust to that. But people were also really, really forgiving and just happy that we were doing it and that they could wave hello and ride their bike and sweat and, say see you tomorrow. It was great. We're still actually doing it. We're now doing it primarily from the studios during a live class. So we're streaming to people at home from the studio where we're teaching a live class to actual people in the flesh.
That's incredible. So you guys have actually, taken something that was a necessity during the quarantine and made it part of your business as usual.
Yes. In parallel with the virtual live stream that we were doing, we invested in some equipment and setup to pre-record classes and basically offer an on-demand service entirely separate from our day-to-day live schedule. We have this monthly subscription, which is a library of pre-recorded classes. And that has really been awesome because it's high quality, it's quality audio, so we're not dealing with the Wi-Fi stuff that we did with the live stream. Very proud of it. Great instructors, great classes, same Intercycle quality, but it's from your home, or you can basically take Intercycle anywhere, which I think is really, really neat.
Very cool. And how did you go about getting that technology? I bet that's something that would probably be of interest to, a lot of business owners that maybe, oh, I wish I could do X, but I'm not really sure how to go about it. How'd you guys go about that?
Yeah, so I think it's really it's a lot of self teaching. Like any entrepreneur, you're gonna find out what you need. In our business, Emily and I own it. She is my best friend and business partner. But with that, our husbands play very active roles in it as well. And so my husband happens to be very technologically savvy. And so he really has done the heavy lifting with, what do we need for a camera? What do we need for audio? He knows how to set and calibrate mixers and all of that stuff. So his background has been certainly helpful in this space. Emily and I are very eager to learn. So we're now video producers. It's been fun. It's been stuff that, like, we never even thought we would need to do in this industry or this business, but it's certainly been a cool avenue for a new revenue stream that we never saw as like a possibility before.
No, I know. I think they say necessity is the mother of invention. And it seems like you guys have taken that sort of, that period where a lot of people were freaking out and struggling and did a ton of innovative new things and learnings to help bring what you normally bring to people, still bring that to them and bring it to them in new ways, which is really great.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you too. You mentioned one of the things about opening other studios is making sure you have a great staff. What was it like communicating with your instructors during the quarantine and seeing if they were on board to do virtual classes? How do you keep in contact with them? What's that like?
Our staff is about 50 instructors now across 5 locations. They have all been really, really fantastic through the whole thing. Some of them, when it started getting a little bit tricky in the studio, backed down from their teaching, so we kind of knew where they were at. But once we went virtual, those that really like are so passionate about it. We're stepping right up. I'd love to teach. And just, I mean, they've been incredibly supportive through this to just kind of do what has to be done to kind of stay afloat. And we really tried to be as transparent as possible with, you know, where we were at and what we needed. And it's been great. But yeah, I mean, people that had the setup and they had great Wi-Fi and they had all of the tools that they needed to do a good class were like volunteering left and right. At one point, I think we had 4 or 5 virtual classes a day that were live stream Monday through Sunday. On the weekends, we did like 2 or 3. But it's a real time commitment because Emily and I on the back end were basically monitoring each one because you have to manually email the links out and monitor them in case, you know, somebody drops off Wi-Fi. You have to say, hey, you're not there anymore. Yeah. So it was very much a huge time commitment. And now that we're back in the studio, same thing. Not everybody's ready to come back because of their home situations or their work situations. So we're just really understanding I think this whole thing has really taught Emily and I that it's not about the small stuff anymore. It's really taught us that, like, you know, what not to stress out about, and staffing a full schedule is not really our problem anymore. The fact that we can even open the doors and run a couple classes is just so great. And we'll get there. I really believe that, like, you know, in a couple months time, or even if it's a year, you know, we will see the other side. But it's kind of slow and steady. Like, we're not rushing back in to get 1 million bikes in the studios and pack them in anymore. What we're comfortable with is what we're going to do. And we need everybody to be on board with that.
Perfect. That's a really good perspective to take. What are you guys doing in studio for the clients that come in terms of, like, cleaning equipment and signage to help promote social distancing within the studios?
So the fitness guidelines, I'm not sure what you are aware of or how much you know, but the fitness guidelines that they've put, at least in Massachusetts for phase 3, are very restrictive and mm-hmm. confusingly written. So okay. There is a lot that is up for interpretation. One of the guidelines is that you need to have 14 feet apart for intense exercise,
okay,
which spinning falls into that category. Or, and that's to do it without a mask. Or you can do partitions, which could be 6 feet apart and wear a mask. Now, I can't see many people wanting to ride in a mask for mm-hmm. a 45-minute spin class. So we just kind of went with, we're going to do the 14 feet apart, no mask, or masks optional if you're more comfortable. The studios that we have open right now are distance 14 feet apart during class. If you're not in class, you need to enter and exit with a mask on. And all the sanitization is done by InnerCycle staff. So we are committing to people walking into a fully sanitized, or as much as possible, right? There's obviously risks associated, but a fully sanitized bike, sanitized doorknobs, countertops, all of that. Like, so we take the cleaning on ourselves, which makes me feel more comfortable. It really leaves little ability to not have had somebody wipe down the bike before you or after you, or, you know, so we just take that on. And people have signed an updated waiver that includes COVID language. So that's protecting our business, but also just basically knowing that people are wanting and aware of, you know, what's going on so that we can protect ourselves and our staff and all of that.
Cool. Makes total sense. Thank you for providing that info. And I agree that there is a lot of interpretation on some of the rules and the phases, and it can be a full-time job in itself just keeping on top of what phase you're in, what you can do in that phase, when it ends, and what you need to do. So thank you so much for providing that. I wanted to talk really quickly about switching gears from sort of like post-COVID, where I think switching what you've done has been really impressive in terms of offering virtual classes and switching the in-person from 30 bikes to 8 bikes. I wanted to talk about something completely different, and that's just sort of being a co-owner of a business, you know, with one of your best friends, if not your best friend. What's that like? How do you guys delegate responsibility? How do you guys work together in partnership? Because I think co-owners are looking for tips, or people are just looking for a great way to work together with someone.
Yeah, I would say Emily and I have a really great relationship. And before we really got into this, people cautioned us and said, "Are you sure you guys want to do that?" Because we were really, very best friends before we took the plunge into business. And I think it really comes down to respect and understanding that two pairs of eyes are better than one pair of eyes. And my advice to any entrepreneur is that get a good wingman or secondhand man or, partner, because it's been so critical for us, not just through this recent hurdle of COVID, and navigating that, but through the past almost 10 years. I mean, it's just to have somebody to bounce an idea off of, or you feel strongly about something, but there's a different perspective. She and I have really have very different skill sets, and I think, if she feels strongly about something and I don't, it's a go just because she feels strongly about it. And I think vice versa, if I'm really kind of sticking my feet in the sand about something, she'll recognize that, even if she doesn't necessarily agree, kind of like allow that respect and ability to be flexible and delegate. You can't do everything, and you need to recognize that help is welcome and necessary.
Love it. I think so important to not only know what you're strong at, but know what maybe you're not so strong at and be comfortable asking. Great advice, great stuff, and a great perspective on sort of the partnership that you and Emily have. I love it. I wanted to ask, what's next for the Inner Cycle? What do you guys have in the works? What's up with the next couple of months for you guys?
I think right now our focus is definitely getting back to the studios and keeping the lights on at those studios, and really
Sure.
kind of transitioning to in studio while still kind of staying connected with people at home. Because, like we've discussed, this is not something that we anticipate going away in any capacity. So, like, really, it's about staying connected, staying committed, and really kind of moving and pivoting with whatever comes our way. We learned, like, over this that it's just really humbling what the universe is capable of throwing at you. So, I think Emily and I are just more determined than ever to keep fighting, and we're not done. So COVID's not gonna get us.
I love it. If people want to find out more about your business, if people want to find out more about the Inner Cycle, people are interested in your virtual classes, where can they go to find out more?
Best place probably is our website. Innercyclestudio.com is our website. And then our social media pages. We post daily. We are The Inner Cycle on Instagram, and The Inner Cycle Facebook has its own as well. And then our locations have specific Facebooks as well. But the main page is The Inner Cycle Facebook page, and our Instagram is The Inner Cycle. And that's where you're going to see daily updates, current stuff. And if you want more info, you would want to subscribe to our newsletter.
If you're interested, definitely urge you to check those pages out. Hillary, thank you so much for joining us. This was really informative, and really interesting. And good luck, with what you guys are doing, and keep it up. And thanks again for joining us. We hope to hear from you soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Small Business Stories is presented by Vistaprint. For more advice on running your business, visit the ideas and advice section on Vistaprint.com or follow Vistaprint on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you know a business we should feature on Small Business Stories, email us at podcast@vistaprint.com.